Welcome to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, a show dedicated to cybersecurity challenges, solutions, a journey together, not alone. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of MSP 1337. I'm joined this week by W. Curtis Preston of Druva. Welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Hey, so we just had a brief moment to catch up before the show started. And with your background in business continuity and data protection and data recovery and all those things, it got me thinking we really are in a state where we underappreciate or undervalue the importance of good backups. And to what you said right before the call that really kind of shook me in my boots is the guys that are the ransomware, the threat actors out there, they're not necessarily targeting my live operations anymore. They now, in fact, are looking at my backups because why disrupt your business when I can just take the backups and then tell you about how bad things really are? So walk me through, I mean, definitely an evolution in your career path with business continuity. I know you mentioned you've written several books. And this is really a passion for you. This is more than just a job because no one writes four books unless they're passionate about what it is that they do.
Or really, really bored. One or the other.
Or hey, you know, hey, if you can fill your time by writing books and it's about business continuity and disaster recovery, those kind of things, that's a really important thing. We recently, in my role with CompTIA, we're getting ready to relaunch the Trustmark. And one of the things that's been really interesting to me is when you look at control sets like CIS and some of the other frameworks, a lot of them reference the need for business continuity plan or right, something along those lines, but they don't necessarily include it as part of their control set for their framework. They just reference that you need to do it. So, right. So talk to me about your experience and maybe some of the pains that brought you to where you are today. And then we'll talk about how can we impart some, you know, infinite wisdom on our audience.
Absolutely. So I started my first year in this business was in 1993, and I started out as the backup guy at a credit card company. And interestingly enough, I had a disaster, if I can make quotes in the air. We lost the purchasing database shortly after me becoming the backup guy, and we weren't able to restore it due to a misunderstanding on my part of the way Oracle worked. And that feeling that I had at that moment was a feeling that it's still with me. And I basically said, well, that's never going to happen to me again. I'm never going to back up something without fully understanding it. Right. And so I just ended up focusing on this topic that a lot of people gloss over, or at worst, they do their best to get out of it, right? They, no one wants to be the backup guy. And
what you just described is almost like a feeling of despair.
Yeah, like, exactly.
If you weren't the reason that it happened, I just had this conversation a couple of days ago with a good friend of mine, Charles Love. He was talking about over the weekend, he was doing a data restore and he goes, I'm too old for this. And his point wasn't that he had a hard time with the doing it part, but it was more of the burden and the stress that you get. He's doing a data restore. He's like, I'm confident in the backups, but it doesn't change how I feel trying to make sure that we get this data recovered for this client.
Yeah, exactly. It's a stressful job. You're either invisible or you're in trouble. Nobody
invisible remembers, in trouble. I like that.
Yeah, nobody remembers the millions of backups that you got right. They only remember the one restore that you got wrong. So,
which is very similar to the world of protecting infrastructure in general, right? Because the threat actors
very much,
they get it right once, they win. We get it wrong once, it's nothing else really mattered anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I've done this in a number of ways. I was a consultant for a long time. I was an analyst for a little bit, and about just over 5 years ago, I joined Druva, which is a SaaS-based data protection provider. And who also has an MSP program, by the way. Happy to talk to you about that. And they and then this thing called ransomware started happening. It actually started happening before I joined Druva. But what's happened over the last, I'm going to say 2 years, is that people have started hardening their primary infrastructures. They've Sure. started installing a number of, you know, tripwires, if you will, to notice that something is happening. And there are a number of things that people should do out there to either stop that initial piece of malware from getting in the first place. The problem with that is any one of your users can bring it in. And, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link there. And you can do things to limit its impact, to limit lateral movement within your organization. And you should do all of those things.
Sure. But to your point, the emphasis,
yeah, go ahead.
Just to clarify, what you're talking about is still the emphasis by solution providers, MSPs, on the left of boom, right? The pre-boom happening.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
opposed
well,
to
yeah.
some of the other
Well, there's
pieces.
Some. Yeah, there's some things that you can do, you know, that help after the boom. My concern is that, you know, a few minutes ago I said nobody wants to be the backup guy. Well,
right.
as a result, there's this really important system that's sitting over in the corner that no one knows anything about because they don't want to know anything about it. And it's possibly now becoming the most popular attack vector in the data center. So because you've hardened the primary data, the ransomware threat actors are now saying they go in, you know, you got that initial malware incursion, it reaches out to a command and control server, and the first thing that it's then told to do is to see if you can figure out what backup software is running in that environment.
Sure.
Right. And there's, you know, like, I'm not going to name names, but like the top three backup products, they're pretty easy to recognize if you know what you're looking for.
Sure.
And then it's pretty easy to then figure out what the backup server itself is. And then, since at least two of the three most popular ones are using Windows as their backup server, it's then also easy to then attack it, right?
Right.
It is possible. Notice I switched from easy to possible.
Sure.
It is possible to prevent that, right? There are things that you can do to protect especially your data. They can be quite challenging. They tend to be things that people don't think about or don't do. For example, one of the most common things to do with backup servers and many servers is to have them part of your Active Directory domain, right?
Oh, right, for sure.
And it's the worst thing that you can do from a data integrity standpoint, right? So, and also you have things like RDP on and SMB. You tend to have all these, you don't tend to have these things done to your backup server. And as a result, the threat actors are going directly after those backups. And then what they're doing, instead of the old school, they're still doing the old school encryption and demanding money for that. But what they're doing now is they're finding that if they can do this new type of attack, it's not really
it's a win-win.
It's a win-win. And the new type of attack is to exfiltrate your data,
sure,
unencrypted if it's encrypted. And then now they actually have your data in their hands, and they can do this new threat, which is to say, give us the money or we're going to reveal either your company's worst secrets, like things that are going to embarrass your company, like things like HIPAA violations, right? You're a hospital and we're going to reveal your patient data, or it's your, you know, it's the 11 herbs and spices for your secret recipe.
Yeah. We now have the Colonel's special recipe. That's right.
Exactly. Right. And that's a very different business decision. No backups are going to help you with that problem. because once the data has been exfiltrated and unencrypted, then there's nothing you can do.
Right. This gets into that. Is my business capable of still operationally functioning versus is there any reason for my business to stay functioning if that is the case that's transpired?
Yeah, I would say it's the number one reason that so we did a survey with IDC last year. I guess it's still this year. We did a survey this year where they asked 500 companies around the world of all different sizes and forms and whatnot. And they found that 48% of them were infected with ransomware at some time in the last 3 years. And here's the really sad part. 60% of them paid the ransom, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's because of this switch to this exfiltration style attack. And so I can't do anything about the primary environment, right?
Right.
But what I can do is help people understand how important it is to secure the secondary environment. And also say, yes, while it is possible to secure some of the stuff happening in our competitors, I do think it's one of the easiest ways to properly secure it is to not have an on-prem backup environment, to use a SaaS-based data protection provider like Druva. And I understand the phrase that to a hammer, everything looks like a nail, but I challenge you to argue with me on that point, that having an on-prem server at this point makes more sense than a SaaS-based service from a security standpoint.
I don't think it matters. You could pick a series of scenarios where that's no one would question it at this point. And yet, I think the bigger challenge, less the security part is, and I'll just give the example. I mean, Microsoft's made it very clear, get off Exchange on-prem, period. Like from a security we're also at wit's end with being able to provide the level of security that we know is necessary for that on-prem Exchange server. And yet we still see time and time again where the client has still made a decision of, yeah, we're still going to stick with having the Exchange server on-prem.
Right.
So and maybe you have an answer to this. I think there is a battle in ensuing between solution providers and their clients, and it's becoming less and less prevalent, I think, but it still exists. And it's, you know, if I have 100 clients and I have 2 on Exchange server, I have 100 problems because of those 2 Exchange servers.
Like, yeah, that's the 80-20 problem in a different way.
Right. Yeah. So do you have this almost is a shift, but and you can go back to where you were at, but like, I feel like there's like a, I don't want to say it's a recipe, but like there's 3 or 5 things to say that have nothing to do with how much does it cost from a, you know, shifting from one to the other. It has everything to do with how important is your data? How long can you survive without having access to your data? And then the third one, and I'm not sure I'm saying these in the right order necessarily, but the third one is, if the data were to get captured, like compromised in the context of it's moved from point A to point B, not that they can do anything with it necessarily, but if you get to those three, what's your level of confidence that that data is still safe?
So you're saying... I guess I misunderstand. So I was thinking it in terms of an attack.
Sure. So my thought process is, so there's an attack where they're banging on the door.
Yeah.
And we can safely assume in a lot of cases that some doors are eventually going to get broken because of the brute force.
Right.
But in my head, I'm thinking, you're looking at this. So if I was moving to cloud right now today, mm-hmm. there's multiple factors in play. One is the door is more secure, but there's more layers to it than that, because eventually we know if someone makes a mistake and the door got knocked down, but there's still all the layers behind that. Like, yay, they're dealing with, they found encrypted data and they made a copy of it. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the level of probability that it's going to take them, you know, 15 minutes or 15 years or more to break into that data? those layers, I think, are really important.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I would say that it's highly dependent on the infrastructure that you use, right? So I know, for example, one of our competitors that uses the Windows machine key to encrypt the keys to the kingdom, like the admin password and all of that. And it's stored in a database, an encrypted database on a Windows server.
Yep.
So if you got that, literally, if you Google, again, I'm not going to be throwing out competitors' names, but if you Google how to, you know, unencrypt the bloody blah database, you'll find a web page up there that says, if you happen to have a copy of the database for this backup server and you have the machine key, which if you have access to the machine, you'll be able to get, it's a 5-minute process to unencrypt that username and password. Once you have that username and password, you have encryption.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you're now the backup admin.
And we're seeing that across other vectors, right? This isn't just about data backup and vendors who have business continuity strategies to provide you all, whether it's on a Windows server or moving it to the from Windows to the cloud. We're seeing this also. We just saw this with 365 with scraping session variables from the browser, and the user doesn't understand why it didn't prompt for their two-factor token, so that they must have not been compromised, and yet suddenly someone's logging in from Tokyo.
Right, exactly.
I picked a very specific location, but that was just the other day.
Yeah. And so I don't know. As a guy who's specialized in this for coming up on 30 years, at this time, I just don't understand how you could, be using Windows as your backup server. I just don't understand how you could do that. And that's the two primary, the vendors that are at the, upper right of that company that likes to make four squared evaluations.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't going to say the Q word, but they like to make evaluations, and the companies that are in the upper right, they both use Windows as their backup server. So I just don't understand how that's possible in the current threat world.
I don't disagree. I mean,
yeah.
And I think,
by the way, I told them that like 6 years ago when I was thinking about coming to work for a vendor. I was like, I see this as a major risk for you guys. And it's not like I now work for Druva and so I'm picking on the competitors. Like I said this back when I was independent, right? So anyway,
I go back to 2015 when I felt my first ransomware from a company that I didn't even work for anymore, and they asked for help, and they were using tape backups. We're talking seriously old school backup solution. I think we were able to definitively determine that at least two cycles of tape backups were compromised because, back then we didn't have the level of check. You know, it's writing ones and zeros. As long as the ones and zeros are able to write to tape, you got a good backup.
Yeah.
So you're describing something that's almost sometimes you have to experience the bad thing to make a change. I mean, we've seen an evolution of many different vendors have to make a change to their entire product and either choose not to because of tech debt, or they choose to do so, but tend to do it not as fast as they should.
Yeah, I tech debt is part of a problem. I think the main problem when it comes to backup and recovery is that nobody just gives a darn. Right.
No, because it's an assumption that it's happening because we're at a point in technology that should just work.
Yeah. Well, nobody wants to raise their hand and say, hey, I'll be the one to go look into the backup system and to make the change. Because then if they make the change and they make a mistake, then it's their fault. Right. So nobody wants to be that person.
But we're picking away at something that's much bigger than backup. If I'm the cybersecurity expert or authority within your organization, and the defining grain of sand happens to be tied to a failed recovery or a compromised backup, I'm still the one on the hook for it. And the reality is, I'm not the expert on backup necessarily as a, as your, you know, say trusted advisor or the, you know, in-house CISO.
Yeah. It's, yeah, I do agree that the data protection team should be part, basically should be, you know, married at the hip, if you will, to the cybersecurity team. And the problem really is that in many environments, there is no team, right? It's just a thing. It's a collateral duty of someone, and it's the thing that they got to do. And so there's just not, and yes, I do think that a SaaS-based system can solve this problem for them, because at least the cybersecurity aspect will be handled. There isn't, because if you pick anything else, right, and so we're not the only SaaS-based provider, but if you pick anything else, like an on-prem backup server, that server will need attention, will need constant attention from a cybersecurity perspective, and it's most likely not going to get it, right, because no one wants to be responsible for that server. So,
and we all have a finite amount of time to pick what fires we're going to, and you're literally talking about the, you know, least attractive option in the equation. I can go and make sure that, you know, the firewall, I did the firmware update and here's the proof and it's blocking this extra thing. But when it comes to backup, until something actually happens to it, no one cares about it.
Yeah. There are a number of things that you need to do to your backups, whether you're SaaS-based or not, that you need to protect against accidental deletion or unauthorized deletion, for example, right? So even if you use a SaaS-based data protection provider, you need to make sure that you have protection against someone defeating your authentication authorization system, right? So, you know, you're familiar with things like MFA exhaustion and all that, right?
Yep.
So if you get that, if someone is able to, even if they didn't extract the keys like we were able to do with the Windows system, if they're able to, they can figure out your email address, and then they can, I know of at least one attack on a Druva customer where they gained control of the entire computing environment. And so they were, and at the time this customer was using email as their MFA. And so so they were able to authenticate themselves as the Druva administrator, fully authenticated, because they had control of the email environment, which is one of the reasons why you shouldn't use email as your MFA. But the point is that customer, if the hacker deleted their backups or deleted their configuration, that would bubble up to us, and we would be able to defeat that, right? In fact, there's a setting in the backups. It's an optional setting, but I think it's a setting every customer should use, that actually that even you can specify that, you know, let's say your retention period is 3 months, you can specify that even a cloud admin in Druva is not able to delete backups sooner than they're supposed to be deleted, right?
So basically
a worm feature.
So let's shift gears. I think there's two things that we still need to talk about that actually get into. One is, to your point, we'll call it the intentional and accidental of end user with data. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important one to capture. And then I want to follow up on that second part. So do you have triggers, or do you think triggers need to be in place, whether Druva does this or not, to detect things like end user has deleted a large volume of documents or moved out of, so the file integrity might be the same, but it's no longer in the same directory, like where almost like forklifting to another folder. Yeah. Do you have sort of like a checklist that you might recommend for an admin who's making sure that backup business continuity has the integrity for something like that? I think it doesn't have to be a long list. I think there's just a few things that are really critical.
Yeah, those are the, you know, you've mentioned some of them already. Those are the kind of things looking for large changes in file name extensions, right? Sure. When they encrypt the files, they tend to encrypt it with a specific extension for that encryption mechanism. Looking for excessive deletions, looking for excessive restores, like if we're sure. talking about the backup and recovery system, looking to see if there's significant changes being made to the backup environment itself. So reducing, for example, reducing the retention period, right? So I'm going to reduce it retention period to one, and then tomorrow afternoon, all your backups are expired, right? And restores. So you have a certain level of restores that you do on a normal basis. And then suddenly you're doing 100 restores a day, right? What the hell, right? So these are all things that you should be watching for. Druva does have triggers in there to notify that. We have a posture and observability feature that looks for that. But that's really only something that, like an automated system, you should be using an automated system to look for that, right?
Right.
Again, we're not the only company that has that feature, right? You're not going to manually catch those. And if you do manually catch them, it's way past. It's like the whole roach thing. Like you see one roach and there's 100 behind it, right? If you see a manual, if you're able to see something manually, you're going to, you know, it's a way worse problem at that point. But the key is that you need to harden that backup infrastructure itself.
Sure.
So that they can't do damage to the backup infrastructure itself, right? Hopefully the trigger will happen and you will notice that you've been infected.
Yeah.
But a backup side really can only notice, it's like going for a cancer screening. By the time the cancer screening comes, you have cancer. Those are your news. You have cancer.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing here. You need that primary side because it can notice this as it's happening.
Sure.
A backup system can only notice it after backups happen.
Right.
And after more backups happen and you detect a trend. Right. So you've got to secure that backup system so that number one, it's not able to be used as an attack vector to exfiltrate the data itself. And then number two, that if you've got to prepare for a bad actor to gain control of the backup system itself. And then they go in there, by the way, this happens in Microsoft 365.
Sure.
Where they set, and then they reduce the retention down to one or one version.
Yeah.
Microsoft 365, same thing in backup. We're going to set retention to period to be one day, which is the way you delete all, everything you else. Know, all backups. Yeah. Yeah,
that lends itself to the second part of the question. This is really, and I'm not, this is not me targeting Druva. This is more of a question around vendor responsibility. Because you mentioned the option checkbox. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the option to turn this on. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this in the other example. Everybody's heard this one. You know, Microsoft now moving to default security security defaults are now turned on. Like you can no longer just opt out. You no longer can say, I don't want 2FA.
Right.
Do as far as the vendor community goes, are we getting to the point where we need to just stop saying that the solution provider is an expert on solution or business continuity and backups and start going, hey, by default, these are the list of things we're turning on and you can choose to turn them off. But the mm-hmm. option is the toggle is in the other direction.
I think that, well, so first off, we have done that in most other areas. We have like, I don't know, let's say 10 or 12 things that we've either enabled or added to the product in the last, say, 2 years.
Okay.
Almost all of them are, well, first off, it's tough to turn a ship when you have thousands of customers, right? So, you know, we have the new customers, we can say, okay, MFA is on by default and it needs to be the good part, you know, don't use your email as MFA, right? it's more difficult when it's an existing customer.
Sure.
Right.
And I, and I'm not
that we're not doing it.
Yeah.
No, we are doing it, but
yeah. And I can understand that
this one feature, it costs the customer money. Because, well, it doesn't, if so, it's a semi-regular thing for people to go, oh, this group of backups, we don't want them anymore, so therefore we're going to delete them. We charge by the gigabyte, right? And okay. On the back end, how sure. much we store on your behalf. So if we turn on a feature that doesn't let you delete your backups, and then you go to delete your backups and you can't, you'll end up paying more and you'll be unhappy. So that one feature, we said, you know, they need to enable. By the way, we already have like a recycle bin feature that
like basically a 30 will day.
Yeah, well, it's 7 days, but yeah,
whatever the duration is, it doesn't happen in an instant, right? Like it's we're essentially saying, even if you made a bad decision to delete the data and you changed your mind later, you've got 7 days to figure that out. But more to your point, the policy should still be that as an admin, I can't just. I guess the thought process I have is that you can't just willy-nilly delete it. It would be like, it's kind of like if I got an email that says the CFO is asking you to transfer $20,000 or whatever the dollar amount is.
Right, right.
And I go, okay, no problem. And when I go to do it, I'm stopped because I have to get a secondary signature or a sign off or a PIN or something that says, are you sure you want to do this? And now it's not just a, you know, it's done, you know, so a threat actor would have a much more difficult time of doing that.
Yeah, I do think that whenever possible, where you're not going to create a negative customer experience, like the one I was just mentioning, wherever possible, you need to enable these security features and enforce them, right?
Sure.
MFA being probably the best example of that, right? If you're not enforcing MFA at this point, if you don't even have MFA at this point, right? I there's plenty of vendors that I use in my consumer side of my life. There's plenty of vendors that I use that don't have MFA. And I'm like, as soon as I sort of log in, I'm like, I think about what's there.
Yeah.
Right?
What's at risk?
And I'm like, would I care if, you know, like Lowe's, I just got a delivery for a dishwasher from Lowe's. When I log into the Lowe's website, it doesn't have MFA. But do I care, right? Like somebody's going to see my purchase history at Lowe's, or maybe I guess they could order themselves something.
Maybe. I mean, that gets into credit card on file. And
except that I don't store the credit card on file.
See, there you go. So yeah, you've got your own added layers of security.
Yeah, yeah.
We are right out of time. This has been a great conversation. If there was one thing to impart on our listeners surrounding, you know, that transition from that on-prem to cloud, and we know full well that, you know, the decisions that both our listeners and the general industry make are not going to be tomorrow we're going, can't do that on-prem anymore, got to go to the cloud. But you said some things that I think are really important, one of which is like, don't have it be on the domain, you know,
right.
Probably don't have it on the same VLAN, like make sure that how it's getting there is a little bit controlled and it's not just some sort of like, well, we plugged it in, turned it on, authenticated, and we're good to go. Is there anything specific that you think of, you know, you've been doing this for a really long time that just says, hey, if you could do one thing different tomorrow with whatever solution you're using, change this one thing.
I would say that if you have the ability, there's a phrase I got from a client of mine years ago, and he said, we close Windows whenever possible, which I thought was they were a big Linux shop. if you can, you know, if you're still stuck on that backup system that uses a Windows database, at least look, the two big guys, they both have Linux-based and cloud-based abilities
options,
copy the data. They don't have it for the main server, but they do have it for where the backups are. You still have the other problem, but you know, Windows is what I'm scared about. And I'll throw one other thing. If you're interested in this backup world, my most recent book from O'Reilly called Modern Data Protection, you can actually get it free by going to druva.com/ebook. You know, there you go.
Well, thank you. As always, I appreciate anybody that's willing to take 30 minutes out of their day to be on MSP 1337. For those of you listening, thanks and have a great week.